Welcome to our third session with Professor John Burgess coming to us from Germany. This has been a really fascinating series. Today's topic is finding a language for the gospel in a post-Christian land. So without wasting any more time, let's get on to finding what that language is. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Sarah, and greetings to all of you. I was saying to Sarah and some of the other folks online that today is election day in Germany. So people are busily going to the polls. Of course, they can also have voted by mail, but everybody is anticipating or excited to see what the results are because there are three political parties that are very close to one another in the national rankings. And today I happen to be in a small village. I'm not in Wittenberg, but in a smaller village about 50 miles away. And it's been fascinating to see the people in the village since this morning, not going to church because the village church has services only once every 4 weeks or so, but going to the election polls. So let's open this morning with a word of prayer. Lord, we thank you that you have brought us safely through the night. We thank you for ways to gather, to be Christian community. We pray that you will bless our thinking together, that we might grow in faithfulness to you and one another. And we pray in Christ's name, amen. Let's review for a moment what we've been doing. We've been talking about the church in Germany and the forces, the trends that are shaping the life of Christians in Germany today. And of course, Germany is a very different social context from our own in the United States, and yet there are interesting parallels and perhaps interesting challenges that we share in common. The first week I talked about what it's like when the majority becomes the minority. So at that point, I was reporting to you from Wittenberg, Germany, the city of Martin Luther, the place that is symbolically associated with the beginning of the Reformation, October 31st, 1517. And how that Christian culture, of course, there had been a Catholic Christian culture up to that point, and then a deeply rooted Protestant culture that took hold in this part of Germany for centuries. But then with many different changes in the 20th century, industrialization, the growth of cities, the division of Germany, then after World War II and the experience under communism, for many different reasons, what was once a Christian culture is today in many ways a secular culture, a post-Christian society. And what's that like when you were used to being the majority and now suddenly you're a small minority? I said that in Wittenberg, there are about 50,000 people and 3,000 of them belong officially to the church. They pay a church tax, it's called. It's actually a voluntary contribution. And then out of those 3,000, there might be 150 or 200 in church on an average Sunday. So out of 50,000 people, 1 to 200 in worship. The majority has become the minority. Now, we don't know what is still before the church. History has surprises. We see some similar trends in the United States, although perhaps not as dramatically, and the United States does have a different history. The churches in the United States have always sprung up more from the bottom as different ethnic groups came to the United States with their churches, whereas in Europe, the churches were often state churches, and there was a sense that they were imposed from above. Nevertheless, I think in the United States, we increasingly will have the experience that we thought we were the majority, but now suddenly we discovered that we're actually in the minority. So when German Christians have that experience, and especially in this part of the country, there can easily be a sense of discouragement, of disorientation. Do we still matter? Do we have any purpose? Are we just forgotten history that's going to pass away? Our first week, John Hayes suggested the image of salt. Perhaps even as a minority in society today, Christians still can be salt, that in their minority status still adds something essential to society. And then last week, we talked about what remains of a Christian culture, even though few people go to church and few are formally members of the church. Nevertheless, one is constantly surrounded by the reminders of that Christian culture that has such deep roots in Europe. The fact that people want to maintain churches, even if they don't go to church, they want to restore churches, they want churches that dominate the cityscape. They will form foundations to raise money to restore bells or to maintain the church cemetery or to restore an organ that is especially significant historically. So, and then Sarah and I were talking at the very beginning as I logged on about the fact that even Sunday is different in Germany. There's still a reminder of the time of the Christian culture because grocery stores are closed, many businesses are closed. All of that is written into German law. It is actually hotly debated today. There are many small business owners who would like to be able to open their businesses on Sunday. But the churches have still lobbied for a Sunday closure, this reminder out of the scriptures of a day of rest, a day of Sabbath, a day where people can step back. And again, that's still largely affirmed in Germany today, although increasingly debated. Well, I suggested last time that next to the image of salt, we might think of the church and these reminders of Christian culture. We might think of them as symbols that still point people to something transcendent, to something that goes beyond their ordinary daily experience. They hear the bells tolling. The bells often ring at assigned hours during the day, and they fill the city with their tolling. And one, of course, can take that for granted, but perhaps pauses for a moment and thinks of another dimension of life. Or when one looks at a church spire, or when one steps onto the church cemetery for a burial, there's still something transcendent. But I thought some good questions were raised last time. The Christian church is certainly more than a symbol. How can that symbol relate people to a community, to what's going on inside the building, to the people who gather, to the people who express a faith, who have convictions, and who have a certain way of life. So that's really our topic for today, how in this new landscape of post-Christianity or secularism or whatever we call it, how do we find a language? How do German pastors and German Christians find a language for expressing the joy, the love, the beauty of the Christian faith that can touch people? And that's not easy. When you become the minority, you look a bit like an oddball. Some suspicious Germans think that Christians are all religious fanatics. So how to overcome that? How to offer a vision? How to be a bit of salt, even in a society that can be suspicious? Let's turn to some slides. And Ted, if you'll set those up for us, we'll get some visual depictions. And I'm going to be talking especially about a church in Berlin this morning, although I'm not in Berlin, but this is a church that I visited not too long ago and is, I think, a very interesting example of what the church in Germany is doing today to try to reach out, to be present, to receive people, to pique their interest. All right, so this first slide is from 1985. And if you look carefully, you'll actually see that this church, this tower, is between two walls. These are actually the walls of the Berlin Wall, the wall that was built in 1961 to separate East and West. And at the time of building the Berlin Wall, this church, it was called the Church of Reconciliation, was stuck in the no man's land between these two walls. So East Germany, East Berlin, the Berlin Wall, and now this church that can no longer operate, can no longer be a parish because it's stuck in this no man's land. Next slide, please. Well, and now you can actually see the demolition. I happened to be in East Berlin on the day that this church was demolished. And though I did not actually see it being demolished, I had friends who out of their apartment windows viewed the implosion of this building. The East German military, East German security people finally decided to bring the whole church down. The end of a Christian culture, the end of an era of Christian presence, going to be symbolized by the removal of this church along the Berlin Wall. Next slide. So yes, again, you can see the wall and the area to the right, the other side of the wall, that's East Berlin. And this picture is actually being taken from a apartment house in West Berlin. Next slide. The tower continues to come down. You can imagine how emotional that was, especially for people who had once been members of this parish. The members of the parish, since the building of the Berlin Wall, had been separated. Some of the parishioners were in the East and some in the West, and they could no longer gather. They could no longer form a parish. And now this symbol, this reminder of the transcendent that could still bind them, even when they could not gather physically, even this symbol was being removed. Next slide, please. Well, today, the Church of the Reconciliation has come back to life. And its present pastor is this man, Thomas Yeutner. The Church of the Reconciliation is no longer the old church building that we viewed, the one that has been imploded. But when the Berlin Wall, fell in 1989, the church thought long and hard about whether to rebuild anything on the site. The Berlin Wall, of course, after 1989 was dismantled for the most part. But if you go to Berlin today, that area around the Church of Reconciliation has become a memorial site. And perhaps some of you have been to Berlin. If you go to Berlin, you'll certainly want to see this. It's a place where tourists and others gather to get some small impression of what the Berlin Wall was once like. And in that no man's land, that of course is no longer a no man's land, but rather is a memorial site, the Church of Reconciliation has been rebuilt, and Thomas Yeutner is its pastor. Next slide, please. So this is the memorial site. You can see that portions of the Berlin Wall remain, and there are tour groups that come through here. There are explanatory tablets, some small sense of what used to be. Next slide, please. One of the old guard towers. Of course, several hundred East Germans were killed trying to escape from east to west. The Berlin Wall and that no man's land, it was actually these two walls that we've seen, was heavily patrolled, it was mined, and nevertheless, there were desperate efforts to try to escape. If you go again to Berlin today, the most famous checkpoint was the one controlled by the Americans called Checkpoint Charlie. And there's a museum there where you can learn about various escape attempts, but most were thwarted. And this terrible sense of being imprisoned, being stuck behind a wall, and wondering if Christians still had a future. Well, even with reunification, this question remains. In a different form, not under a totalitarian dictatorship, but nevertheless, given this history, fascism, national socialism, communism, and now a pluralistic society, what will Christians be? Next slide. A portion of the wall that's not been torn down, filled now with graffiti. That's a problem in Germany, sort of a funny sociological phenomenon. German cities tend to be very clean and orderly, seemingly in contrast to American cities. But graffiti is all over the place as though to make up for the order and cleanliness that otherwise characterizes the city. Next slide. Yeah, again, more of the memorial site. And then back to the right, we're going to see a church. And next slide. This is the rebuilt or the new Church of Reconciliation. Right in the middle of that no man's land, right in the middle of this memorial site, right in the middle of where thousands of tourists pass by every day. A very different design, very not a large imposing cathedral. These interesting wooden slats and all the green area around it. But again, the church is present. And our question, how then does the church find a language to speak to these thousands of people who walk by every day, but otherwise may have nothing to do with the church? How does the church not simply stand there as a symbol, but also invite people to discover something about its life? Next slide. Here's the interior, very simple, very plain. You can see on the right the cross that was once atop the old cathedral. And you can see there aren't very many chairs, not all that many people come to worship on a Sunday morning. But there's something also quite interesting and inviting about this simple church space. It's quiet. And sometimes people will wander in and simply discover that out of the busyness of all the tourists and visitors pushing back and forth outside, there's a different area, a different spot, the spot that somehow speaks of this different reality that Christians call God. Let's look at the next slide. Well, behind the Church of Reconciliation is a garden area, and it's tended by the church, again, as part of this no man's land, or what once was a no man's land. But the church has planted a wonderful garden. Of course, I was there at the beginning of September, still sunny and warm and summer-like. And I learned to my astonishment that the church allows anybody in the neighborhood to claim a plot where they can tend flowers or vegetables or what they want to plant. You know, in a city like Berlin, that's very attractive. Most people live in apartments. They don't have necessarily access to a garden area. And so something like 150 people have claimed plots in this church garden. Now, again, most of them, many of them are not churchgoers. They may not even be members officially of the church, but they have discovered this spot and the church has welcomed them. What's also fascinating about this garden is that the people who tend the plots come from 65 different countries. Berlin is truly an international city today, but also a city with many refugees. You may remember that in 2015, almost 1 million Syrians were welcomed to Germany. It was a very controversial move at the time that the Chancellor Angela Merkel said, we're going to reach out to these Syrians who are fleeing a terrible war. And so Syrians came, but also Iraqis and Iranians and Afghanis. And then there are people from who escaped from North Africa, from Libya, or are seeking better economic opportunities in Western Europe. But 65 different ethnic national groups represented in this church garden. Let's take a look at the next slide. There's a man from Afghanistan who actually is tending bees, has a bee house here. A refugee escaping from war-torn Afghanistan, which of course in recent weeks has become so much a part of our awareness again, and this place of refuge in a church garden. Next slide. Well, in the church garden, and again, you see a portion of the wall, the old wall that remains. In the summer, Pastor Yoitner has organized outdoor worship. The people under the pandemic circumstances are sitting distance from one another, but here on a Sunday morning, in the former no man's land, in the midst of a garden with plots tended by people from 65 different countries, Christians also gather. And this is one way that they're trying to find a language. You know, when in society, people aren't quite sure anymore, what are Christians about? What are they doing? There's this hesitancy, often a kind of fearfulness about coming into a church or getting too close. But when the church is in the open, then as here, tourists are walking by, they're watching, they're curious. What's going on here? Who's gathering? Why are they gathering? And people stop. Again, they may not stay for long. They may never enter a church. And yet, they listen. They are welcome. They perhaps hear something that can speak to them about their own existence today. Next slide. So here, this amazing altar in the former no man's land, the Church of Reconciliation. What an amazing name, the Church of Reconciliation, the church that was once actually a symbol for the division of Berlin, now able again to be a symbol of bringing people together from East and West, from the different nations of the world. I think this is one way that the church in Germany is trying to speak a language for today, that the church is a place of reconciliation in societies and in a world that are polarized, where there are conflicts and suspicion, distrust, that people can rely on the church to be different. People can experience the church as a place of peace, of harmony, of reconciliation. That's a hard task for Christians. We know that our own churches can easily become polarized. We know that within Christianity in the United States, there are often deep suspicions between different Christian groups. But in a society that is post-Christian, a society that no longer understands Christianity except as a vague historical memory, East German Christians are finding one way to make a witness, one way to talk about who Jesus Christ is, what the cross is about. One way to be salt is to be a small community that is a reconciled community, a community that witnesses to a different way of existence in a world of suspicion and polarization. Next slide, please. On the other side of the church, the Church of the Reconciliation is there on the left, but during the summer, there is a field that's planted with rye. And in the late summer, the rye is harvested, and then the rye is milled, and the flour is used to bake bread. And the bread is used for the Eucharist, for the Lord's Supper. Loaves of bread are also made and offered as a gift to other churches to use for their Eucharist. And so, again, this witness that out of our own meager resources, this little rye field in the no man's land gives life, becomes bread, bread that people share, bread that calls people to be reconciled. These very tangible gestures, I think, are very, very interesting that the Christian language is not just an abstract language of words and ideas, but it's this embodied language. It's this language of Eucharist, of tending gardens, of raising food, but all in a way that calls people to a different way of life together, a way of life that witnesses to the reconciliation that Jesus Christ has made possible. All of this is deeply theological. This is not a ploy to attract tourists. It's really coming out of the life of the congregation to witness to what we can do with our meager resources. This congregation has, again, as I said, only 30, 40 people on a Sunday, on a good Sunday. I think the Sunday I was there in the garden, there were about 30 people. And in the winter, when people worship inside the church, there are fewer. Meager resources, a small garden, a small rye field, and yet this creativity to witness to what Christians can give to their society, what they can offer. Next slide, please. So another picture of the rye field before its harvest. Next slide. And then on the other side of that wall, where we saw the altar up against the wall, on the other side of that wall is a cemetery. And so that's also a powerful symbol that on one side of the Church of Reconciliation, we have a memorial site, the tourists, the garden, the rye field, but here on the other side, a reminder of death, reminder that human life seeks a meaning beyond this life, that Christianity has something to do with the way we think about a life over death, beyond death, the mysteries that evade us to try to put into rational language. But the Church of Reconciliation also helps to tend this cemetery. Next slide, please. Again, a view of the wall on the one side that's left over and the cemetery. Life and death, and yet all of this taken up into the one, the Jesus Christ, to also reconcile somehow life and death, who through his death offers life, where life and death are no longer oppositions, but that somehow one is enveloped in the other, in the mystery of God's ways with us. Next slide. This is on the anniversary of the building of the Berlin Wall, and various dignitaries have gathered in the church. So as a memorial site, it is also a place where dignitaries, politicians gather on the August 13th, the day that the Berlin Wall went up. Next slide. Well, there are other ways that the churches in Germany are trying to find a language. Often it's through music, that just to get people inside a church who might otherwise be afraid to come inside a church, to hold concerts, to... Now, you might say, well, that's not really the gospel, but in a way, it's at least an invitation into the gospel when religious music is performed in a church, the church opens its doors, and then often the pastor will say a few words that proclaim the gospel, even in this different kind of context. Next slide. So wonderful organs in Germany. Sarah Kyle can tell you all about that. But again, opening the church so that people discover something beautiful. They overcome some of their fearfulness about what goes on inside. Next slide. I'll talk more about this next week, but also a very important witness for Germans in German Christians today is church kindergartens, where people who otherwise don't relate to the church send their kids because they have some sense we can depend on the church, we can trust the church. The church is somehow different. Even in its smallness, even in its minority status, there's something there that's reliable, where there's something about a commitment to peace, life together, reconciliation. All right, I think that's the end of the slides. Ted, is there yet another one? Okay, one more kindergarten picture. But church kindergartens are an important form of Christian witness in Germany today. Again, not necessarily that the parents or their kids are Christians or come regularly to church, and yet this is the effort of the church to have a language of welcome, openness, touching people that breaks down some of the barriers that otherwise exist. All right, well, we have a few minutes for any questions or comments. I welcome any of your observations, and whether there are things that we can learn from this, or perhaps German Christians have learned from us, because I think in many ways we, the church such as Westminster, really has many open doors. And I'd be interested in hearing from you how that touches the wider community in which Westminster finds itself. All right, so I'll pause a minute and see if there are comments.
I'm going to speak up, and Jay has something he wants to say.
An observation: the church was still standing after World War II, I assume, and wasn't rebuilt after World War II. What a miracle that was. And what a shame to see it demolished afterwards.
That's right.
My other question is, did you happen to speak to the pastor about any future plans for evangelism?
Yeah, so you're right. The church, of course, had to be closed after World War II, after the division of Germany. Could never be used again, and then was not rebuilt. Once it was demolished, then this other smaller church was eventually built on the site. Yeah, evangelization, I think, happens, as I'm suggesting, in fairly quiet ways. An evangelistic campaign in a place like Germany would turn many people off. Again, they would perceive that, and maybe that's, again, a particular aspect of German culture, but they would find an evangelization that was louder and more public, going door to door, that would confirm their suspicions that Christians are oddballs and perhaps even fanatics. And so I think the evangelism that takes place here, the evangelization, is more in this way of trying to open doors and draw people in and then welcoming their questions and listening. And in that way, trying to interpret the gospel, that the church is a place that listens, cares, responds to people's particular problems, and is a place that people can rely on to care about them, to a reliable place where there will be a commitment to reconciliation. So that's the particular form that Germans are using today to think about evangelization. Not so much to use words, but to show forth, demonstrate a welcoming and openness, a reliability that breaks down some of the barriers that people might otherwise have, that they can become curious and want to come into the church and then learn that they can actually ask hard questions and that the pastor and the church leaders are there to listen and to try to respond, to try to give witness to this reconciliation that we've received as Christians in Jesus Christ. That's long, hard work, a lot of patience. The results are not always immediately evident, but there are results. I was telling you how important church music is for drawing people in. And there are examples of people who join church choirs, not because they are Christians, but because they love music. They want to sing with a good choir. And it doesn't always happen, but sometimes it does happen that the music evangelizes them. And by being present in worship as they sing, these people who joined the choir just for the experience of the music decide to be baptized, decide to become church members. That's not the majority. It's a small number, but I think those are the small ways that evangelization takes place today.
I have a comment. This is John Hayes. I was really struck by the idea of reconciliation in the symbolism of the garden. When you think about it, it may be mythical, but the whole Judeo-Christian tradition started in a garden.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a real garden, but the idea of a garden at the beginning, before we split up into Jews and Christians and all kind of sectarian Christians, so a lot of divisions, speaks of the time when there was unity, when there was no division, in a sense, it's like going back to the beginning, and now it's a reconciliation, which is a return to a kind of a unity of spirit. I think the garden is a very strong image and a very strong symbol. So it just strikes me that way.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's really interesting, John. So you have people from 65 different countries speaking all kinds of languages, Russian, Arabic, Ukrainian, Serbian, you know, Lebanese, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
And, but also Germans and also members of the congregation. And all these people are crossing each other's paths as they care for their little plots in the church garden. So the church is trying to live out that vision, as you so beautifully put it, you know, of the reconciliation that God created the world to be, the first garden. And, you know, back to the question of evangelization, that when the garden is open to all these different people from all kinds of nationalities and religions, but also with the church congregation present members and the pastor who knows all of these people who have claimed their plots. And he walks through the garden and welcomes people by name, and they know him by name. That's how Christians are making their witness, that there's something about the gospel of Jesus Christ that brings people together. And then maybe some people become curious about that. You know, why do you open up your garden to everybody? And you don't charge us anything. And I'm not even a Christian, but here as a Muslim, I have a plot next to the church. That, I think, makes for some interesting conversations and potentialities. You know, if, again, I think churches in the United States probably do some similar things to welcome people from many different backgrounds into a church school or into social programs. But the garden, yes, the garden is a place where people are working side by side to make something beautiful that the church is offering them. That the church says, this is what for us it means to be Christian, to bring people together, to bring people together beneath the cross of Jesus Christ. Yeah, you know, there's a garden at the beginning of the Bible, and at the end of the Bible, the garden reappears, although it's a garden within a city. And that's kind of interesting. The Berlin Garden is not the paradisical garden without any civilization yet. Civilization happens after Adam and Eve are driven from the garden. But at the end of time, the garden that is restored within the new city, the new Jerusalem, and can a church garden in Berlin be the beginning of a witness to a new Jerusalem in the city around it? Interesting symbols, yes.
This is Chip. I had a question looking at the demographics that we face in the States, and also and really focusing on the youth aspect of it. How does social media, if at all, fit in? Because I have a nephew who has found the church through an online, I don't know if it's YouTube, but an online type source. And certainly the youth are tied into the internet and the social, that way of identifying with the church. Is there any kind of an effort in that manner over there? You attract the youth because our demographics in this church are the same. It's we're all getting older, but we need to attract the youth in some manner.
Right. You know, the ecological movement among young people, you probably have read about this, is very strong in Europe and very strong in Germany. Just there's a movement called Fridays for a Future. And it's a bit controversial because young people, as they organize for environmental protection and against climate change, actually go on strike. They leave their school on Friday to go demonstrate and protest. And, you know, that raises difficult questions about education and how who can decide who goes to school and when. But in any case, it's an example for a younger generation here that is very attuned to climate and environmental issues. And I guess what I'm saying is what the Church of Reconciliation does with its rye field, with its garden, is a powerful symbol for young people here. They have a sense that, again, that the church is committed to reconciliation with the creation. But you asked then about social media. And of course, social media are widely used here. In fact, those of you who might be curious now about the Church of Reconciliation, it has a very nice website. And after church today, you can look up more about it, see more pictures. I believe it has both an English version and a German version. I think a younger generation that has grown up not really knowing much about the church might actually become more open to the church. Has not experienced the church as something required or simply a part of their of social custom. So yes, but social media certainly play a very critical role for that. And the church has to take that seriously.
John, I'm going to say thank you very much and stop the recording now, but to the extent that you can stay and other people have questions, we'll welcome them after I stop the recording. Thank you. This has been excellent.
Thank you. And next week we'll finish up. We'll be talking about the special hope that I think Christians can bring to their society today. So I hope you'll be able to finish the series with me next week.